We are the ink to the page, Japan land the punch. Unmanipulable power, we got the stuff. We know they got story, been new, they got hot. Complex narratives and black carriers, tell me where they see us. Where I see us, where I see us, they wanna be us. But tell me where they read us, not they wanna be us. Out the damn cage like a nigga from Georgia. Insane and out the brain and lacking in origin. Act flashbacks and shots to the system. Downloading new issues and sitting for a listen. Where I see us, where I see us, they wanna be us. But tell me where they read us, not they wanna be us.
They wanna be us. They wanna be us. Where I see us.
Hey, man.
Where I see us. Where I see us.
Where all the black people at, man?
Where I see us. Where I see us.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Where I See Me, the podcast where we look at comics and media with lots of questions in mind. Mainly, where the hell are the black and brown people? And so I'm Jamie.
And I am Marcellus.
And we're back for season 3, episode 2. I mean, you all probably can guess what we're talking about today because I couldn't contain myself last episode. It's like halfway already discussed. But before we get into our topic, Marcellus, how are you?
You know what? I am not bad. I think, I wore a t-shirt today. The same t-shirt I'm wearing right now, and it was cold enough to wear a t-shirt and an additional layer, just barely. And so I was cold, is what I'm trying to say. Very much the opposite of our film, our story that we're discussing today.
Our film.
Kind of made me wish I was, in a still suit on Arrakis.
You know, I so wonder about those suits because I'm like, are they recycling their body's water, but is it being like
filtered? I mean, I would hope. I feel like what's the thing called, like when you like a staph infection?
I don't know.
Shout out to everyone suffering from a staph infection while you listen to this.
Oh my god.
We're rooting for you. I'm good. I'm all right. How are you?
Oh my gosh. You know, this week has been, it has been what it was. I'm going on vacation / work. Ooh. This weekend. Like, but working on like all my own art stuff, so I'm excited to do that. And even if it doesn't come out right, I'm just glad to be by the beach. Like that's all I need, just to be by the beach this weekend.
Well, you're already there right then, right?
Well, you know, okay, so our people who are on Patreon who can see us know that I'm not on the beach, but I'm on the planet Arrakis in the background.
That's gotta be, is it cleaner than Galveston?
You know, I think it is. Arrakis looks really cool though, even though it's like, it could like kill you. It looks cool. Someone just rang my doorbell. It's like,
sorry, that was me.
How are you in two places at once?
You know, that's a good question. I can't legally answer, but I'll just say that very expensive and a lot of debt and still somehow behind on my work.
What?
Four hands are better than two. That's the old saying, right?
Oh my gosh. Four hands are better than two. Well, should we like jump into what we're talking about today?
Let's do it. Let's jump.
I'm sorry. I'm like so distracted by the fact that there's somebody at the door and it's like night. I'm like, why?
Oh, that's true. It's getting darker earlier.
Yeah, it's like we're recording this at 5:53 our time, central time, and it's literally nightfall. Like the streetlights are on, it's dark outside.
the creepy crawlies are out and about.
Right. But it's fine. My mom will take care of it. She's on it already.
But we're getting into Dune.
Yay!
Both iterations in terms of movies.
Well,
right?
I mean, kind of, because I only watched the first 30 minutes of the old one.
Oh.
But I mean, already off the bat, the old one, which is from like 1984, 86.
I believe, let's just say 85, because that was
wow. Just split the difference. It's 1985. I feel like it's 80. I feel like I'm pretty confident it's 84. But already I was like, oh, we've got some of the same lines. We've got, and that's about it. I mean, it starts really different.
Everything else is so. It's very David Lynch. Starts off so dense.
Yeah, it feels like Star Wars adjacent in the David Lynch one as it's starting, because we get that girl on the screen. Oh, the Emperor's daughter, the princess. I don't know what an Emperor's daughter would be called. I guess a princess.
Yeah. That's not, I can't think of another term that feels equivalent.
So, you know, she comes on screen and she's telling us all about the known universe and how her daddy run the show, and like everybody likes spice melange, and like it only can be harvested on the planet Arrakis. That's also called Dune. Like, it's very like, let me explain the entire book to you. So, because I know you probably haven't read it yet, but let me just explain it all to you in this like brief intro, and then we'll hop in and you'll know what's going on. But then let the lines in the movie also over explain the things to you so that you know and you don't have to read the book. And I'm just kind of like,
every time they like speak between the lines, it just made my brain gain another wrinkle, because I just couldn't. It's like getting up. They describe the process of standing up almost.
Yes. It's very literal. It's very literal. And Denny Villanueva's version from 2020, completely different.
Oh, so it's almost the 2021 version feels like, if I had to compare it to anything, wait, because did he do Blade Runner 2049?
He sure did.
It has the same effect of like simplifying certain aesthetics, but not losing the like wonder. It just simplifies them, so you don't have to look at it and go, why is that happening?
Yeah.
Which I don't know how to, I didn't think there was a way for me to feel like the story could get more dense. But I don't know.
Well, the first one, the David Lynch one. Okay, let's backtrack. What other films has David Lynch made? Because you keep saying his name like I should know who he is. And I probably should, right? Should. Yeah. Should is a horrible word.
Well, you know, it's I think it's a toss-up, because I think it's one of those things where he's one of those directors who he's so distinct in a specific style or way of making, that if someone's like, what type of movie is it? And you go, it's a David Lynch movie. And you go, oh, it's going to be weird. Okay. So he's responsible for the TV series Twin Peaks. He's behind Eraserhead. I'm trying to think of the, was it Blue Velvet? I'm thinking of the wrong.
All the names of these shows and movies are very familiar, but I have not seen any of them.
That's fair. I feel like his sort of filmography, Mulholland Drive, Blue Velvet, Twin Peaks, Eraserhead, the 1980s Elephant Man, Inland Empire, Wild at Heart. He has a lot of very specific stylistic choices, and he's a big fan of just like getting non-actors or doing really awkward, stiff dialogue.
Yeah, the dialogue. Okay, you know, like I said, I only watched the first 30 minutes of this. It was giving very like stuffy theater, like the way the lines were delivered. There was no emotion, right? No. Like in. And then the Villanueva one, when Duncan Idaho comes back and, like, Timothy Chalamet. I'm going to mess up the child's name. Everybody messes it up.
Pauly Shore.
Pauly Shore. No.
When Pauly Shore comes back, or when he went, when Duncan Idaho comes to meet up with... Paul Blart, Mall Cop 2.
What? Oh, okay. I'm just saying, like, the two scenes are so different. Like, Timothy is, like, super excited to see Duncan, and Duncan's, like, equally excited to see him, whereas in the 84 version, it's very stiff. It's like, hello, young man, let me shake your hand, and I'm on my way to Arrakis. I wish you could go with us, but you cannot. And blah, blah, blah. I will see you there. And it's none of this, like, whiny stuff that Timothy does. Timothy does whiny really well in the Villanueva movie. He has, like, the right amount of, like, whininess.
Yeah.
Like, I want to go, too. And, like, or, like, what pouting. Is my turn? Yeah. Or, like, pouting. Pouting's probably more. He does the pouty, I'm the Duke's son stuff pretty well. But okay, so those are David Lynch films. I haven't seen a Denis Villeneuve film that I don't like. I will fully admit I fell asleep on a couple of them, but I still like them even though I fell asleep on them.
They're long.
That man is
consistently.
That man is so long winded. He don't know how to like not be long winded. I don't, sir. Can you tell it?
Is this the same cinematographer? I'm just curious because this movie looks so beautiful.
You know what? Because, you know, when people get their cinematographer, they like, we Lincoln for life. You're working with me and everything. You can't.
I'm going to stand behind him. That's my man.
And I'm going to stand beside him. Yep. I don't know who the cinematographer is. Director. Okay. Denis Villeneuve. Blah, blah, blah.
I think it's interesting. To think of those two films existing at the same time, because they're also, I mean, because you watched I know you said you watched 30 minutes of the older one, but the new one, you saw it on HBO Max, right?
Yes.
I saw it in theaters.
Oh, how was that experience?
It was both good and bad.
Uh-huh.
Because you can't pause it.
Because you can't pause it.
And so, I get to the movie experience of, you know, get some popcorn, get a soda. And I went and saw it with Isabella and her sister. And I think the ability to be able to eat and, like, you know, go, oh, let me pause it, go to the restroom, let me stretch a little bit. Didn't really have that. So... It felt extra long, but I did like pieces of it.
Was this the movie you said was bloated, or was that another movie you felt was bloated?
This for sure felt bloated. Just because, but this honestly, I it had been so long since I saw the original, and even then I hadn't seen it in its entirety, that I was like, yeah, the original doesn't feel nearly as long.
It is.
I'm a liar. It's almost twice as long, and it's how it feels. And it's the same length. I think it might be the same exact length.
Because the original one is 2 hours and 16 minutes. The one that Denny just made, it's also 2 hours, but I don't...
It's like maybe 2 hours 25?
So, yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah, 35. 2 hours and 35 minutes. So it's like an extra, 15, 16 minutes on it. Which I feel like all of it was necessary. So, you know, watching it, I mean, let me backtrack. Because we were saying, okay, I was saying, like, there isn't a Denis Villeneuve movie that he's made that I've seen that I have not liked. Mm-hmm. I liked Blade Runner 2049, even though I fell asleep on it 2 or 3 times. It's just not a movie you watch when you're tired and about to go to bed. You have to, like, be, like, alert and ready to watch it. And even in that, like, and I think sometimes in Dune, like, there's these moments where there's not a lot of dialogue happening. It, like, people are actually, they're acting on the screen. Like, things are happening. Mm. You don't have to, like, fill it in with so much, like, and now we're going to go to planet blah, blah, blah. And these are the people who live here. It's, no, the David Lynch one is, but I get it. But I get it because the book was so, also came out in the 80s. So, like, he felt the need to, like, over explain it, right? So that people would even maybe, like, go buy the book, which I'm sure some people watched that movie and went and bought the book. But I'm just like, calm down. I mean, when we finish the episode today, I'm going to go finish the old one, I guess.
Really?
I guess. I'll see. I might just put the new one on because, you know, it's only...
You could always watch a YouTube video talking about it.
I could, but I think I should watch it.
All right.
I hate the word.
I'm proud of you.
Your voice went up like 3 octaves. You're like, all right. All right. Wouldn't be me, but all right.
I just finished it before we started recording, so I've got that post Dune fatigue. Just like warning the weary traveler. Turn back. Turn back.
If you're tired, I would not watch either movie if you're tired. Like, you need to be like, I'm in the mood to watch a movie and be alert, because otherwise you're gonna be asleep. I had a student in my class who was like, he tried to watch Dune but he kept falling asleep on it, and I'm like, that's okay. I was like, I can see that. I fell asleep on it too, once or twice. I've seen it at least, I have played it at least 5 times and fallen asleep on it twice.
See, you've watched it more than I have. I only gave both films the one time.
Really?
It is very hard for me to, if something feels long, it's hard for me to give it more than one pass, like, at a given time. Because you know me. I'll watch a movie 3 times.
I know. And I'm like, you like movies, too. Like, you are a movie.
I watched The Wiz 4 times this month.
But it's The Wiz. It's fun.
No, that's what I mean, though. The it's fun. Like, it pulls you through. Because The Wiz is 2 hours, 17 minutes. It's the same length as Old Dune.
Which is
funny. I like how I said Old Dune like it was like some guy that stands on the corner in the neighborhood.
I know, you're pointing to your TV, and it's like only the people who are on Patreon can see that you're actually playing the movie in the background. It's the old dude in the background that's playing. Oh, I thought I turned my notifications off, y'all. I'm sorry.
This podcast is brought to you by Jamie's ringtone.
Stop. Oh, I hate cell phones. I wish I could throw it away. I really want to throw it away sometimes because it's too, just
get one of those communicators like in Dune, a little like the old style radio. Do you remember that?
And the new one or the old one?
The new one where they had like the really It was like a big old clunk. Well, truthfully, maybe the old one would be better because they had like, well, okay. Should we talk?
I know, we've been talking around the movie.
Should we talk about, because we've seen both of them.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about how you enjoyed and disliked either?
Well, okay, maybe first we should talk,
because I'm just thinking about the differences so far.
I think first we need to tell our listeners about the premise of the film and the book, because we're talking like they know. We're doing the Villanueva thing where we're just talking.
You're right.
Like they already know what it's about.
So there's a young boy and his family dies, and he doesn't know that he's a wizard yet. So
he, Harry Potter?
Oh, okay. No, Dune, I would describe it as this similar to Star Wars. It's almost like this, not a space western, but it's almost like the space opera. Like there's this
definitely space opera, space drama.
Yeah.
Vibes. Only thing is, you know, I noticed like technology is not a big, I mean, there's some technological things that are cool, like the thopters, mm-hmm. right? Like it's a dragon, it's mm-hmm. a helicopter, but it has like dragonfly wings instead of like the traditional mm-hmm. That kind of, you know, thing. That's cool, but like there's not a heavy focus on mm-hmm. technology. And we're in the year 10,191, and pretty much mankind has spread throughout the universe, and that's called the known universe. And there's different planets that are ruled by different families. And our protagonist, Paul Atreides, lives on Caladan with his dad, Duke Leto, and his mom, Lady Jessica, who is not the queen or the duchess. Duchess? Is a duchess a duke?
Yeah, not the duchess.
I'm American. I don't know all them titles and stuff. We don't do that over here.
We don't duke over here.
And so Lady Jessica is, it's interesting because she's like the Duke's courtesan or concubine, mm. but she's also like a religious one. Like she would be like what we would call maybe like a nun because she belongs to the Bene Gesserit order of the sisterhood of the,
whatever. In and of itself, like there's so many, there's like in replacement of technology, there is a hierarchy and series of politics. Mm-hmm. That take the stage. Mm-hmm. Like everything else feels purely aesthetic and by not even by chance, but by design to support the way the politics are meant to be highlighted.
Oh yeah.
Like even everyone having I think the titles of like dukes and barons and emperors. Like it's very
know your place.
Like space. You tell me we have to, because even Star Wars just has the Empire, mm-hmm. and then after that, there's like everything else is made up. You tell me we got space dukes, we got space taxes,
space barons, yeah, and also okay, so we're so far away from Earth, I don't think in either movie we get a sense of what happened to Earth. We just know that like human beings have ventured out into the universe, and this is where we are now, and so. You know, there's certain like hallmarks that of Earth. Like I think I talked last episode about like Duncan Idaho's name being a direct mm-hmm. callback to the planet Earth. Like, oh, on Earth there was this place called Idaho, and or like Duncan Hines was this brand. I don't know, like Dunkaroos, whatever, right? Like a callback to Earth, you know. And like there's certain things that sort of have like survived space, like Arabic has survived thousands of years and is like in space. Some there's like certain words like that the I'm gonna mess it up. The one it's the one
from the Quran.
No,
like when they're talking about
the Lisan al Ghalib, that's that the their words because they're from Arabic. I got those. The Bene Gesserit one for
oh
one,
when they're describing the one oh
it's like a is it Yiddish or is it German, what is that word, it's got some Z's in it.
It sounds Yiddish. I might even be able to remember how to pronounce it.
It's like Kizak Hatterak, something like that. The Kizak Hatterak
Kit Kat Paddywhack. Give Paul a bone.
I feel like I'm saying like Meshach Shadrach and Abednego. Which you're like, what? Which they're in the Bible, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. Or as Medea says, Meshach, Shadrach, and a billy goat. But it's Abednego. But you're like, it went over my head.
I know a tomato and a cucumber, Jamie.
I don't
I'm
think
so
they
sorry.
Ever talked about that on VeggieTales, about the three of them being put in that oven and like, the king was trying to set them on fire because they like Jesus and or something like that. I don't remember.
There was an episode of VeggieTales where these chocolate bunnies were put into the fire and someone was like, they're believers. And then they survived the fires.
Yeah, that's Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego.
Okay. Yeah, see, I remember.
I didn't know they were chocolate bunnies.
They were chocolate bunnies, yeah. I gotta be honest. That's the part I remembered. So truthfully, I got the story, but just none of the names.
You ain't getting the names.
I got the morals though. I got the morals.
That was what was most important. You got the morals of the story. I forgot where I was. We were talking about, okay, so the premise, right? Because, and I think it's important to note this, right? The 1984 cast, all white. We knew that was going to be what it was because it's 1984. And it's like, the 1980s, I feel, we still have...
Black people weren't invented yet.
Child, if you don't stop, like Janet and El DeBarge and... all the other people wasn't dancing to the rhythm of the night and Shalimar and people were invented. Every time we...
It's like Mormonism. Shout out to Mormonism.
What? Really? That's where you're going?
I don't know.
Oh, okay, it's okay. I don't know. It's okay.
We're trying to be inclusive here, okay. I guess.
The diversity of the cast. But I also want to go back to the 1980s because every time you go to an 80s night or when we used to go to 80s night at Barbarella's, I love how they pretend like the only black people making music in the 80s was Prince.
Yeah.
And that one song by the Sister Sledge called He's the Greatest Dancer. Like, that's it. That's all they know. And maybe a Janet Jackson song.
That's so rare. That has to be requested.
And you know that DJ don't be wanting you to request. They don't be wanting you to request no music. Talking about, that's not within my, that's not what I bought in my binder. That's not what's on your YouTube playlist. Like, you up here playing YouTube. I know that.
that would make the transitions make sense.
Right? They're probably playing commercials in that joint now. Like, that's probably what is happening. I would not be surprised. Anyway, this is not free sponsorship for Barbarella's in Houston, Texas, on San Jacinto.
I'm gonna put beeps over every time we said the name.
Are you serious?
Yeah. No free press. No free press.
No free press. None whatsoever. So the 1984 cast, all white. Everyone's white. The 2021. It sounds so weird. I've been saying 2021, but 2021, yeah. It is a multicultural cast. There has been, and I can't remember if we talked about this on the actual show last time or before the show, but there has been calls by people, and I didn't realize, like, there's the term or acronym MENA for Middle Eastern and North African people.
Oh.
MENA. There's been a call for to have more MENA representation in the film, which I get that. Because, right, if Arabic survives and there's, like some of the aesthetics of Islam that are present in the film, then... You know, why not? But then also, I'm like, I'm answering my own question in my head. Like, I'm thinking faster than I'm talking, because it's like, we see a diverse range of people in kind of Islamic garb or Arabic garb. And I do know that Arabic and Islam are two different things. Listeners, I know that. But we see people dressed in that style, but there is no like prominent like head cast character.
Yeah, no one who's giving us that main dialogue,
right?
Is...
And so, you know, maybe that'll be in part two. I hope there's still opportunity for that to happen in part two. But I understand their point. But also, like, how do you know the people who are the extras are not Arab or not Mina?
I agree. That was, also, there's only, I think when you have, and this, I mean, this hits on the question of diversity and casting, mm-hmm. period. You can have a movie be poorly casted, period. Like, everyone's, like, not fit for the roles.
Yeah.
Or you can have a movie that's not diverse enough to reflect reality.
Mm-hmm.
But then I feel like there are certain situations where it makes sense to responsibly cast across the board, like main and background and all that stuff. And I think totally doable to do that in the second Dune.
Yeah.
And I think it's more of an issue in that first one where it's you mean not a single person, not a single person.
And y'all using words like Lisan al Ghalib or what's the sandworm's name?
Oh,
dang it! I forgot. Well, while we think of a sandworm's name, I think we need to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors. All right, so we're back from our very, very short break. Shai Hulud is the name of the sandworm. That's the sandworm's name. And it's also, like, considered, like, a creator god. Because when they were in the Thopter and the sandworm was eating the excavator for the dune, for the spice and the new one,
mm-hmm.
Lieutenant Keels is, like, saying, she's, like, reciting a prayer. She's, like, bless the maker, bless his going and coming. And it's, like, because the sandworm just gonna do whatever it wants to do.
Oh, yeah.
And if you've ever seen the movie Tremors, think like that, but like ginormous. And the sandworms in Tremors are pretty big anyway, but like these are like, the sandworms are like as big as, I don't even know. How big
would you could probably say that considering that big old rig got eaten up entirely.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe like 50 yards.
Yeah.
In diameter. Yeah, 50 yards in diameter. Because like that's like what, half a football field?
Yeah, yeah. That sounds about right. It's huge.
And it's got teeth for days. It's like a drill. It's like a drill turned inside.
I want to know how the Fremen get the kris knives. Like the Fremen have these like sacred knives. That are made from the teeth of the sandworm. And I'm like, how did you get the teeth? Does the sandworm just like shed its teeth and you find them in the desert? Like, I feel like, I don't know. I guess I probably have to read the book, which I want to read
the book. There are, you see, you say the book.
There's six of them.
There are six of them. And they are each thick. They're each like, it's like Harry Potter book length.
So I feel that's like I can do it.
Which, yeah. You could totally do it. You for sure. You're gonna have to let me know. I might get an audiobook, but.
Yeah, because that's still.
You're right. There's so many small. There's really small, nuances and all these layers in the Fremen culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see why people would want to see more diversity, and mm-hmm. I think. But I am curious, though. I think this new iteration of, or I guess retelling of the story, it makes me wonder if we're, this is probably the most, I want to phrase this take correctly. It feels like the most nuanced take I've seen so far of a culture being applied into science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't just feel like, wow, okay, we just rammed something into an aesthetic.
Right.
Because like Japanese culture gets treated that way a lot of. I feel like aesthetics from Middle Eastern countries get taken and then just thrown into things.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like in the past, normally it's just pure aesthetic. There's never language or garb. Or if it is garb, it's totally just a full white cast.
Right.
It's interesting to see it in this way, and even to see like the the idea that the friend, because I mean, the story is like a, we've described so far the idea of the space kind of opera, this empire, but the, like the tension, like the conflict is the families in space, the families all have their own roles and power dynamics. They're sent to this planet because this planet has spice. Looks like sand.
I know I was looking real hard. I'm like, it's just orange sand. It's orange sand.
It's cinnamon mixed in with sand. Someone dropped brown sugar in the desert.
Basically, that it. It really did, because I'm like, okay.
Who picked it up and said, "Oh, this is used. I could use this."
Well, you know, okay, so the Fremen have been living on Arrakis for a while, and like they were, I think, the first to use it, right? And so, it, of course, the spice is supposed to do all these things. It's supposed to prolong your life. It's also needed for space travel. Like, ships cannot fly or do interstellar travel without spice. And come to find out, because remember, like we were saying, the technology is not like the main point of this. In the old Dune, the very first scene, one of the very first scenes, they bring in one of those space navigator people, and it's in a tank. And these are not aliens. They are like people who have been in like taking spice for so long, or like have mutated, or something of that effect. Like they've taken different space drugs and have mutated, and now have the ability to travel at light speed. I gotta read the book, but I mean I get it, but I don't get it, you know. And they look funny, like they look like aliens in like a suspended liquid type of chamber thing, and they're huge. They're huge. They look like if you were putting, you know, Damien Hirst's, like, that shark and formaldehyde thing. It's like something like that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look recognizable. It looks like a entity.
Very Total Recall. Very toxic Avenger.
Yeah.
Super, super not nice to look at.
But you were describing. So, like, we had, like you were saying, we had described up until the point, the families, and like the Harkonnens who are interesting looking people. All of these are all these families are human, but a lot of them have evolved. There's some who weren't even in the movie, but I think like I've watched like other people's videos about Dune, and they were saying like there's one group or family line, like they have been in isolation so long that they don't even look human anymore. I don't remember the name of them, but
There's a lot of names,
but we didn't get all of the names in this first one. We really get only things from the Atreides and the Harkonnens, or Harkonnens. It's pronounced two different ways. Like the new Dune says Harkonnens. And I think maybe that's because Zendaya said Harkonnens, and then everybody just ran with it. I don't know. But you were saying about like the cultural elements, because the Atreides household on Caladan, it's like a fusion of like Eastern inspired, like the windows have like that kind of Japanese circular gridded style. But there's also like a heavy Spanish influence too, like with the bull and the matador uniform, like which I think was Duke Leto's father, right? Like, there's a lot of like, it's like a hybrid of Mediterranean and Japanese influence that is happening in the Atreides household for some reason. I don't fully understand it, but I think it, you know, I think it's meant, someone was saying like the name Atreides it actually does kind of sound like something from Greece. It's like Mediterranean culture. Spain, they weren't the only ones like fighting bulls. I think like in Greece, ancient Greece, they used to like jump, they would take bulls by the horns and like jump over them. Like there's like the vases and stuff that show that. I'm like, how y'all do that? I mean, I guess, you know.
Why?
I guess guess, you know, the same reason why people ride in rodeo, like the bronco busting, I guess.
Oh, that, I guess. You know, I guess. I
guess. No, but it is, it's, I think it's interesting how this, the new one puts in, I think, a little more effort to source things so that they feel, it's like, why, it's like giving the details some sort of rationale for existing.
Right. It doesn't feel like decoration. It feels like there's purpose in why these things are here. And so, you know, we have the different families. The Harkonnens have been over the planet Arrakis for like 60 years, 80 years or something like that. And then all
close
of,
to, yeah.
Yeah. And then like all of a sudden... So also because they're over Arrakis, they're in charge of the production of spice and like mining it and selling it. So they're really rich. And so, but for some reason, they're all just like called away from Arrakis. And it comes to find out that the emperor has made the decision that for the House Atreides to take over Arrakis. And apparently the Harkonnens and Atreides, they do not like each other, can't stand each other.
On site.
But also apparently the emperor don't like the Atreides. And so he did this to be messy by sending them there and then telling the Harkonnens, like, I'm going to send y'all back to go kill them. And then, like, he's like, I want y'all to kill them. But, like, y'all got more reason to kill them. But I have the biggest reason to kill them. But I can't get my hands dirty. So I'm going to send y'all back to go kill them. But I'm going to send y'all a couple of my soldiers who... Their introductions, the
saltine crackers. They came in.
Oh my god!
They were ooh.
Their intro scene is interesting. It's a lot.
Both times,
it was a lot happening. A lot happening.
There's a certain amount of like. I don't want to say. The way they go about doing violence is so over the top, both iterations. And though that the king's, I guess, guard almost, the king's like sword, yeah. Not their shield, the sword, they are so intense.
They are.
And I think the new movie does a really interesting job of, I think the scene might have just played out to some degree behind me.
I saw some smoke behind you.
But they're so intense, and it's almost like it's like a steak knife cutting through butter, like unnecessarily sharp. Like there's no reason you had to be that sharp, and you just wasted.
You know whose character was like that in the new one? Josh Brolin. He was doing the absolute most. He was so intense for no reason. No reason whatsoever. He was just doing, just like, they're brutal. And I'm like, why are you all in his face like that? You need to come, sir.
There's a scene that he's responsible for. Because of the old version, his character is played by Patrick Stewart.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Which, very different actor. Very different.
He's very...
on-stage presence. Mm-hmm. He's like very... Because this is the same era as, Captain's Log. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you see the Star Trek. He's like very commanding. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to. He can shout if he wants to, but because there's a scene in the old one where, as they're being explained when they first get there, you know, they're checking out the digs. You know, they don't suspect that this is about to be, you know, a trap. Mm-hmm. They're asking the local researcher, the changing of the hands, you know, is this space set up correctly, doctor, mm-hmm. researcher? And they ask about the suits they have to wear to survive on the planet. And the researcher, he goes to touch the suit to explain it. And Patrick Stewart kind of grips his hand like, hold on, man, don't touch mine. You know, don't touch the Baron, the Duke. And it's a very reasonable, almost realistic, like, hey, man, back up. And he lets go very quickly. Mm-hmm. But in the new one, Josh Brolin about had to take his boot up out the guy's butt
because he got so forceful. I think he pulled like a weapon on him in the new one. It's everybody in the room.
It's a woman, Dr. Kynes. They did recast it to it's a woman, the judge of the change. And yeah, he did pull a knife on her, and I'm like, how dare you, sir?
And she her reaction was also very. She did not appreciate it.
No, but she also knew y'all gonna be dead tomorrow anyway. So like,
yeah,
you know, because she's just there to just watch. Like she can't say anything. She can't, like, you know, they're like, will you testify? She's like, I can't do nothing. I'm under the emperor's whatchamacallit. He must got something on her. But also, it's the emperor, like.
Because where can you hide from the emperor in space?
You can't hide from the emperor in space. But yeah, Josh Brolin was doing the most. And even when Stilgard came, he was like, you will address him as my lord. And it's like, get that out of here. You on my planet. Like, what you mean?
you just got here. You just got here. Like, there's no.
I like Javier Bardem as the leader of the Fremen because he's very just like.
So good.
He's just like, that's all I have to say to you. I'm leaving. Goodbye.
even the beginning of his introduction, when he comes into the room, they commit to this idea that a Fremen greeting is to spit. But he spits on the table because, you know, it's like
there's no water
in your body. Yeah. They'll kill somebody and take the moisture from their body to just sort of waste it as a sign of respect.
Yeah.
Oscar Isaac's reaction too of like, wait, can you explain what this is?
I know, because it was like, thank goodness they sent Jason Momoa ahead of time to go figure some shit out, because he was like, thank you, Stilgard, for supplying us with the moisture from your body. We understand whatever the gift and how it was returned, you received or whatever. And so they, you know, did the same thing. And I'm just like, y'all know first and foremost, y'all on somebody else's planet. They got different rules and regulations about how they govern themselves and which I will say this, in all of these kind of like first contact, world meeting things, no one ever be thinking about like how these two, like how are we supposed to communicate, and like
never,
or like the opportunity for miscommunication. It reminds me of the scene in Arrival, which is also by Denis Villeneuve and is one of my favorite movies, where Amy Adams' character is explaining to Forrest Whitaker why she needs more time with the aliens, or why she needs to like teach them English words. And she was like, because she gave the example of like, and it wasn't, turned out not to be a real example. So she says, but like when the explorers first got to Australia and they were asking the Aboriginal people about the animals hopping around with the babies in their pouches. And they said kangaroo. And like, you know, the explorers like, oh, kangaroo. But what the Aboriginal people were saying, according to her, was like, I don't understand you. Right. So now this animal's name is I don't understand you, because, you know, like, but you get what I'm saying, right? Like, how do you know what you rarely see that in a movie? Like, people rarely take the time to work out, like, there's going to be some tension because these two groups, they're two different people who operate differently. Yeah, they're humans. And that even happens with like in, you know, here on Earth, as if there's somewhere up above, but you know, like if you go to another country, they have different customs. And I guess all I'm saying is that one of the things that's been like a running joke in sci-fi is like anytime Earthlings go to another planet, the aliens just so happen to speak English. Right.
Yeah.
You know,
they speak English, or they're like, you know, you hear like an unnatural shrill and they go, oh, click a button, is this better? And then just basically like,
yeah.
Oh, you don't have a universal translator.
Oh my gosh.
But no, there's the we see this sort of the culture clash, and even the setup for this this massacre.
Oh, yeah. It was bad.
But hidden in all of that, there's like two plots going on at once, where you have the larger political warfare. But then you also have our boy DJ Pauly Shore. Pauly D, DJ Pauly D.
Oh my gosh.
We have Paul Wall.
You name it. Every white man named Paul besides Timothy.
We got Paul Wall, and he's got this sort of bridge between two worlds thing going on, because his father is the Duke, House Atreides. But his mother, being a lady of the cloth, and this whole talk about like a one, someone that's supposed to come along, she's been teaching him this skill that he, which even the way they do that between the films is very different, in my mind, the way it presents. How would you describe? Because it makes me think of. It presents similar to the Force.
It does.
In Star Wars. But it's so much more cryptic.
The voice thing is interesting because we get introduced to it right away in Villanueva's version. When Paul is sitting at breakfast with his mom. And she's like teaching him. So the thing is with the Bene Gesserit, right? Like it's a sisterhood. And they're more about like women empowerment, and like they're kind of also like a shadow government, like they're like kind of pulling the strings of the emperor, and so they have been like crossing bloodlines, like getting people to, you know, placing certain like lady people, like Lady Jessica, right? Like they placed, she was apparently like the top student for the truthsayer to the emperor. And she was told, you need to only have daughters. Because we trying to get your daughter to mix with this person so we can produce the person. And then, like, she was told, you know, but because Jessica loved the Duke and knew that, like, a Duke, you need a son to kind of carry on your name. She produced a son, which apparently they can do. They could control, like, the gender of their child. Like, they can make, because of... Look, the Bene Gesserit got some secrets. They've been dipping in spice, and like they're what they've been, so that they can like they can.
They're the Spice Girls.
They're the Spice Girls. They can see into the future, and just far enough, but they can't really quite see into the past. They can see in the past as well, but not. And I got this from an internet video. Like I have not read the books yet. They can see into the past, right? But they can't see, they can only see on one side because of the female chromosome being XX, right? So you only get your maternal side, apparently. They need a Y chromosome to see both sides into the past. And so that's where they're like, we're looking for the Kwisak Haderach, Tesseract. I don't know. Whatever. The person, right? The one. The one that can be able, that can like fold space and time, that can see past, present, future, like all of it, right? So this is the other plot that's happening that Marcellus is mentioning. Like you have the political thing, the emperor being messy and like wants the Harkonnens to do his messy work for him. But in the background, you have the religious order, which is so funny because this is very medieval Europe, right? Like you have a king and then you have like this cardinal or whomever like whispering in the king's ear saying, do this, don't do that, don't do blah, 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 divorce your wife, don't divorce her, blah, 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 you know, whatever. It's pretty much, I mean, very similar, right? And so, you know, Paul may be the one, and the way that they're setting this up is like he might be the one, and this whole one thing, right, like is a problem for some people who have maybe watched the movie or like, you know, have said that this is just another white savior story. And I, okay, it's being set up that way, But it's something else going on. I don't.
That's absolutely something else going on.
And I'm like, Paul ain't no hero.
Paul's not a hero. He's also not that slick. He's not that slick. And he, not only does he know he's not that slick, I think every single person that has seen Paul goes, maybe, maybe. Maybe not, though, because if you think about XYZ elemental P, there's he's got a lot of things that are not great. But also, I don't know, that there's something about the idea that he's not, they're looking for like a messiah, and he's not that, but he's close enough. Like, it's gonna take a massive movement of people, and that's, I know a lot of people were very mad, because the trailers, it's like the Timothy and Zendaya show, and then you watch the movie, and I know, me personally, I kept thinking to myself, where is Zendaya? She's going to be a part two. That's kind of what it looks like.
Yeah.
Because she shows up in like Visions and we see her a little bit near the end.
She's a dream girl. She's
a dream girl.
She's a dream girl. Which is interesting because, like, you know, in the dreams, I don't know. It kind of sets it up like that she could be the romantic interest, but I kind of hope she's not, because I'm like, I'm kind of over like stories kind of following that arc. Like, they could be just good friends. Like, it's fine. But at the end, when he finally meets, when he sees her in real life, because he knows this girl exists, right? Because she's just been like this figure in his dream, and he sees her and she's just like unimpressed by him. Like, I think we mentioned that last episode. She was just so unimpressed, which Zendaya does unimpressed person acting very well.
Very well.
Unbothered. I don't care. Very well. Her and Selena Gomez, the two of them do unimpressed, unbothered, I don't care. Very, very, very well. Very well. Which I was watching Selena and Chef on HBO Max, and Selena Gomez was saying that she, I think, has bipolar disorder, which I was like, maybe that puts some of her characters, like, the way she leans in her characters, because she's always kind of like, sometimes she's kind of flat, but like snarky. I was like, huh. I was like,
where she's drawing the energy from.
But like we were saying, there's two things happening, and this, you know, messiah thing. So the Bene Gesserit have been at work on Arrakis planting, and like the Bene Gesserit, they be planting their seeds like 1,000 years in advance or ahead of time, like ahead of time, you know.
Like Paul just showed. Paul was born like what, like 3 days ago, and they're talking about, because for a while, like when I was first watching that new one, I kept thinking, man, they're going really hard on her right now about having taught Paul how to try and use a voice and her thing about he's the one. But if you had a 1,000-year plan and then someone went, hold on, I got someone who's perfect for this, and they look like Timothée Chalamet and just rolled up, I think I'd be a little mad, because I'd be like, you know that's not who we were looking for. You know that's not who we were looking for. Do you know what we're doing here? Are you new to this this organization?
I know, because the sister mother, when she first met him, she was like, I hope you live, little young human. I'm like, she's like, you know, and she's very just kind of like, you know, like she has like that, I've lived so much of a life. I know so many things. Like, you may be the one, you may not be. She was like, we got other prospects. She told Jessica, we got other prospects. So, like, they not putting all their eggs in one basket.
Even going so far as to test him just to make sure he would not fuck anything up. Mm-hmm. Like, this bare minimum. I think... It's hard because this movie is so long, but and it's not that nothing happens, but I described it. I think I said this to you because I enjoyed the story and I enjoy the new film. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot more than the older one, mm-hmm. but it feels like a massive prologue.
Mm-hmm.
Like it does a good job of setting things up. And I just, I keep thinking about the way it does environment storytelling
mm-hmm.
in such a great way. Like it feels like the planet when we get to see it through first, like the sort of, we're with the colonizers, we're with the,
yeah.
and then we get taken into this perspective of, you know, what does it mean to capitalize on an environment. It's an environmental angle of sci-fi that doesn't really get explored very often. Yeah,
because, you know, when they, so the Harkonnens, I guess to kind of move the movie along, the Harkonnens come, they try to kill everybody, they kill Duke Leto, but Paul and his mama escape into the desert, which was giving very Mary and Jesus in the desert, like, as I was saying last episode. And they take refuge. Duncan finds them. The Judge of the Change, Lieutenant Kynes finds them as well. And they go into one, I guess it's like a, it's not a siege. It's an old ecological weather station where.
Yeah, it was the former.
Mm-hmm, and she was telling them, like, originally they were going to get rid of the desert and like bring water to Arrakis so that people could have water. But then they discovered the spice. And so then they're like,
they got greedy.
Yeah. And they're like, we need the spice because apparently spice and the sandworm go together. If I'm not mistaken, like the spice is something that like the sandworm is that a kitty?
It is a kitty.
Which kitty is that?
This is Zero. He was on the... Oh, okay. All right, buddy. Well, you're the one who got on the table.
The cat is trying to be a part of the podcast, you all. It's a very cute kitty. It's black and white. It's got white socks. Very, very cute. White socks. The sandworm. The spice comes from the sandworm in some kind of way. And I'm like, is it... the sandworm poops it out? Is it like, I don't know. But you, because also in the old movie, they said something about the bile from the sandworm doing something. So the sandworm is really important, not just to the Fremen, but like to apparently the function of this whole galaxy, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm.
It's
not symbiotic exactly, but it definitely... it makes sense that they have it on this sort of godlike mm-hmm. connection. Like it's a very core part of the planet.
Yeah, it's because they call it a creator, right? And so it creates the spice, which prolongs their life, which also the Fremen have like these blue eyes, which my eyes gotta be blue. All the colors you could have picked, blue. Okay. Whatever. But they're like weirdly blue, like a weird,
it's the whole eye, not just the iris.
Yeah, it's kind of freaky, but it's because of prolonged exposure to spice. But like you were saying about the environments, right? Like they were gonna turn Arrakis into like an oasis because there's apparently water all the way like at the core of the planet that they can tap into and try like bring up. But
you know what that makes me think of, and I can't remember, I could be wrong about the timeline, you know, I'm thinking of already, don't you?
I think I do. The one where, well, I said they turn on the air conditioning.
Yes.
What movie was
Total Recall? Total Recall.
But it just wouldn't turn the air on.
Yeah, turn the AC on all of a sudden. Okay, now the sky blue. Mm-hmm.
Look at that.
All we had to do was turn the AC on.
Look at that. It's the same. It literally kind of looked the same, too. These huge monumental things underground that are meant to, like, you know, circulate the air or whatever, or, like, pull the water up to the surface.
But it didn't do it.
But they didn't do it. Do you have a... So Is it safe to say that you liked the film?
Yeah, I like the film. I think it I know it's very confident. Mm-hmm. I liked the film. I think my issues with it are really just pacing. Mm-hmm. And I think I talked to another friend of mine who really enjoyed the film. And I think when I presented when I had to lay my thoughts out, I liked the film, but I don't think I'll be able to say for sure if I really, or no, I enjoyed the film. I don't know if I like it. I think if I had part two and watched them back to back, I could say for better that I liked it.
Okay.
Because it just feels like I paused
it in a really long movie. It ended so abruptly. They just walked into the desert and Zendaya said, "This is only the beginning." And then it went off. And I'm like, girl, what do you mean? We got to wait till 2023 to see part two. Because they filming next year. They just starting to film next year. I'm like, are you serious?
I was mildly irritated by that.
I want to know if anyone survived the Harkonnen.
Massacre they did?
Yeah. Like, did Gurney survive? Josh Brolin? Because I'm like, why cast Josh Brolin in it? Because they didn't really give Josh Brolin that much to do, but be aggressive.
No, they didn't.
Be aggressive. That's all they really gave him to do. So I'm like, why cast Josh Brolin in it? I guess because it's going to be a big movie. But, like, why cast Josh Brolin in it if he going to die early? I was going to say, why cast Jason Momoa if he going to die early, too? Because he looked pretty dead.
I think that's it. Well, because similar to like a sort of like Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. Granted, now I mean, it's not like everyone in that cast was well known mm-hmm. in the same regard when it came out. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just to give you that sense of like no one is so important that they can't die.
That's true.
Because I for sure did not know Jason Momoa was going to die in watching this film. Because even when, we get the whole thing of, you know, Paul has visions throughout, and one of them is, you know, I saw you, I couldn't save you, or you were there, if I had been there, you would have lived. First of all, Paul, no, that would not have happened. You about 10 pounds soaking wet, but it's just the idea that we don't get a sense of what's changeable. Mm-hmm. In these films yet. It feels like Paul is almost like he's got a spidey sense, but he's just not moving out the way. Like things just still happen.
Oh.
So maybe some of us will get survived, but I don't know if he's not going to know. And I don't think we're going to know because we're going to be stuck with him.
Yeah. Cause you know, like he kept seeing like Zendaya stab him. And that was a vision. That wasn't a dream.
It was a vision. Yeah,
when they went to go see the Spice production, like Zendaya stabbed him, but he wasn't dead. And he was like, I don't know what it means, but it just basically means that Paul Atreides has to die, this version of himself has to die so that another version can rise. And like we hear like old lady Bene Gesserit and like whispering like rise. He's at Hazard. Who she kind of she gives me like Emperor Palpatine kind of
big feelings. Big especially in this new film.
Mm-hmm. Very Emperor especially Palpatine. I'm like the Sith Lord's wife. Like that's
what keeping up with the Palpatines.
Keeping up with the Palpatines, which that was the end of the Star Wars the last Star Wars movie, the girl Rey was a Palpatine.
Yep.
Which, bless her heart.
I got nothing to say about it.
I know, because some people were like, she could have just been a regular somebody. Like, that would have been cool, too. Like, why she got to be somebody to wield the Force?
She could just. Why you got to be somebody?
She could just, you know, like, the idea of the Force just belonging to anyone who can just tap into it. Some people just being naturally sensitive. But that's a whole nother franchise and a whole nother movie. But we're going to take our last break. And we'll be back with our I guess our final thoughts, but you know how we do. We'll probably tangent for a little bit longer. All right, everyone, we're back, and we're going to, I guess, give our final thoughts on Dune. We kind of give you a loose review of the film because, you know, I think it's best to just watch it yourself.
Oh, yeah.
But also know that this whole, like, it's a white savior narrative and, like, wanting to just shut down any conversation around that, I feel like, I don't know, like, I was telling Marcellus like earlier before we started recording this season, like I feel like my mind has become is like there's something in my brain that has like loosened and like it's become like very nebulous and forming, and I'm doing like this little hand gesture that I always do that gets on my mom's nerves. She likes makes fun of me for doing this because it's like I don't know, it's like when I don't have the words for something I just do like this hand motion. But there's something like that's trying to be in me that wants to not see all sides, but like I don't want to be binary on things. Like, I think I need more space to look at things. Right? Some things are like if it's a duck, it's a duck, you know, kind of things. But you know, I just feel like this movie is doing. I really enjoyed it because I've. One, really like sci-fi. I like really sci-fi that's done really well. But I also do like bad sci-fi too sometimes. But it has to be like really bad and knows it's bad for me to really like
it. Yeah, a little corn factor.
Yeah. But I really like this film because one, I love all of Denis Villeneuve's films that I've seen. But also it's an interesting story, right? And it's thousands of years into the future. And we're still having these same kind of problems, right? Like people are being oppressed. The Fremen are oppressed by the Harkonnens. And even though Duke Leto wants to like form an alliance with them, like, you know, he still in a way wants to use them, right? Like he's trying to figure out how to harness their like unique skills and abilities for himself. Because also I think like, Duke Leto's no fool. He realizes, like, you know, the Emperor has this entire, like, Sarkar. I feel like I'm trying to say sauerkraut and Southkar or South something.
He's got this this sauerkraut army.
Yeah, like, he got... Oh, which we didn't talk about that scene with when they were first introduced. Like, we mentioned how, like, it was a lot there, but we didn't really... I guess we don't have to, but... Because I'm like, why are there people, like, who look like they're being crucified upside down and, like, blood is flowing into these pools? And then, people are being, like, blood is being, like, crossed on people's foreheads and stuff.
There's just so much, in terms of, like, procedure and ceremony. Mm-hmm. It's just very clear that this world is deeply embedded in the idea of, like, medieval church and state kind of. Ruling and so many of the customs either make a little bit of sense or it's like I can see how you arrived at this and the rest of it personally is just so obtuse and bizarre that it makes you just want to know who started it and why it's still happening and what the impact is on like the rest of the galaxy or the known universe.
They give, you know, it made me think about the Knights Templar and like all the like, what is it? The mythos around them and like how they are supposed to have worshipped the severed head of John the Baptist and like all this, you know, all this kind of stuff. Like there's something about it that's like this. Yeah. Like this is what y'all are doing.
Oh, yes.
But I really enjoyed the film. I'm still trying to make sense, process what it is, why did I really like this film? I can't really just pinpoint one thing. I mean, the acting was really great. Visually, it's stunning. It's beautiful to look at, right?
Absolutely.
You know, Villeneuve is not going to make an ugly movie. The man can't make no ugly movie if you try. Like, it just don't work with it.
Couldn't do it.
It was like ugly movie. Me, what's never? I could never.
sorry to this man.
Sorry to this man, because could never. Which also, I looked at the cinematographers. He used three different cinematographers for. There's a different person for Dune, it's a different person for Blade Runner, and a different person for Arrival. So he's just like, he knows who to work with. He knows what he wants. Yeah, he knows what he wants. But Marcellus, do you have any, I guess, final thoughts on Dune or anything you would like to add?
I give it 4 sandworms out of 5. I enjoy a lot of this film for like the art direction and the like the aesthetics and the lore, like everything that's set up around it and the mechanics make me go ooh. But so there's moments in the pacing of certain events where I get, it slows down so hard for me that I'm like, I don't know why we're here right now. I don't know.
Where does it slow down for you?
I think it's somewhere between when they first get to the planet and when the sort of the trap is fully laid. Between there, I'm like, why did we stay here so long? And then there's a portion, I think, right when they get I couldn't even like it, the fact that it's as long as the film as it is, and then when they mother and son, Paul and his mom, are in the desert and that first happens, that stretch,
that is a lot.
I can think of like 3 things that happen in terms of like key things, and then the rest is sort of blank from my mind, even though I could rattle it off. But like important things, it just, it feels long, but I think it's just because it's a part one. And if I was, the thing that I want to satisfy me is in part two.
Yeah.
So it's like the next leg of that journey. Even if we were to see like, you know, granted it would have been corny. So I'm glad it didn't happen. But like the, you know, whatever that next thing is, like, where are we supposed to be going there? And like they point out somewhere and you see what the destination is. It's not that type of film because it's, and it doesn't have to be, but I think that's why I respect it, but I don't know if I like it yet.
Okay. In the old one, because you just watched it. I think I remember reading, so like Paul's mom is pregnant.
Yes, and Paul we know that early on
like Paul knows that his mom is pregnant, and she was like, I barely know that I'm pregnant, how do you know? But in the old movie, the mom has the baby and the baby's already grown.
It's like in this weird grown state. It's like, so that's, yeah, that's another aspect of it, because the first telling of this story has so many experimental sort of off, like avant-garde choices in trying to tell it, that it just distracts from the actual messaging, or like the, I guess the environmental aspects. So I don't know. I think if I had to rate both of them, the Dune as a story is engaging, and I think even if it's dense, it has a lot of cool world building. The first Dune movie, I gotta give like a 2. I don't know. Like, not that number ratings make any sense, right? There's no, you can watch it or not. But if I had to base it off,
I might switch to the new one though, because I only got a couple more days to watch it.
It's worth watching. It's worth watching. But if I had to be like, oh, did it use its time well? I don't think it used its time well. Because there's a lot of old sci-fi movies that use their time pretty... Again, Total Recall. One of those movies that is fun, weird, takes time to navigate a kind of strange world, but doesn't give us all the answers. And I think the old film tries to give you all the answers. Whereas the new one, you get a lot of mystery. Like, we get a lot of those visions presented in a way...
where we're not having to then explain them right after. They just happen, sort of. And I appreciate that. I think he was the right director to try and tell this story.
Definitely. Definitely.
But the first one did have Sting.
Was he in that? Was he?
It's his acting debut.
Really? Sting, you know, Sting is in also in Only Murders in the Building.
Is he really?
Yeah, he lives in the building where the murders are happening. And they think he did it. But of course he didn't. It's Sting. So you gotta watch Only Murders in the Building. It's a cute mess.
A cute mess.
It's a cute mess.
But yeah, I feel like the new one's pretty interesting. Worth a watch. Mm-hmm. For sure. Old one, if you like Korn, if you like old sci-fi, it's definitely worth a watch. Plus now you have to go to the movies to see it. You can actually sit down and watch it and take your time with it.
That's true.
So that makes it, I think, all the more fun.
HBO Max. Thanks, HBO Max. I know like Denny didn't want it to premiere on HBO Max, but like I'm glad it did.
Accessibility.
I know he didn't want it, but it's like, sir, like I'm not about to. I mean, I went to go see Candyman in the movie theater, but like I probably wouldn't have gone to go see Dune because I'm like, I don't know anything about this movie other than like Zendaya's in it and like it looks cool. Because I was like, you know, my first introduction to it was like, you know, seeing the stills of Zendaya with the little breathy thing in her nose and like how poignant. And it came at a time when we were all covering our faces. I was like, oh, is that going to be the wave? Right? We're going to have these little breathy things in our nose like the Fremen? Are we going to have to wear some kind of still suit-esque thing like the Fremen? You know what I mean? Like, how
poignant. We almost there.
How, you know, came right time. Right the right time. So, that was, you know, that was my first engagement with this film was the images of Zendaya on that rock with the breathy thingy. And I'm like, what is this about? This looks cool. So. All right, my good sir.
I think we've done Duned it out.
I feel like I'm a Dooney. Was it? I don't know what Dune fan base call themselves. Are they like Doonies?
Dune Squad? Dooners?
Dooners. I'm a Dooner. I'm a Dooney. Doonehead. I like it. I really do. And I think I like it for the reasons that you were listing. That you're like, it's good. The world building. The mythos. The mystery. And we have another kitten who wants to sign. Who is this cat?
This is a Toulouse.
Toulouse?
Yeah, it's to lose. I'll put them down.
They're
okay.
Very calm.
They've just been listening, taking notes. You know, watching the film in my steed. Trying to. One of them has glasses on. Yeah, you know, because he has cataracts.
Wow. The cat has cataracts. Okay. Well, I think, you know, we definitely want to thank you all for listening. Special thanks to our Patreon subscribers, Caitlin D. and Jerome C. Remember, you can join our Patreon at any time. It is linked in our Instagram, on our, what is that thing called? Like Linktree? I think
it's our Linktree. Our Linktree.
On Instagram. You can join at any time for as low as $5. You know, it doesn't... You know, podcasting is not easy. It is a lot of fun, but it is not cheap. It is definitely a labor of love. And so anything that you would like to donate, please feel free. Especially the holidays are coming up. You know, don't be a Grinch.
It's the holidays.
Don't be a Grinch. You should give. Especially, I think, is this episode airing? No, we're not airing. This is well after, like, Giving Tuesday, when this episode airs. Giving Tuesday is the Tuesday after Thanksgiving.
This will be blast.
So, you know, we're well after that. But It is the holiday season, and so we're back. We're bringing you more episodes, and we're excited to be covering some of the things that have happened in the past couple of months.
Catching up on all the good stuff.
All the good stuff.
We'd like to give a thanks to our wonderful friends of the podcast, the Toons, deliverers of all that is funky and right. Playdate for the song Why Don't We Talk About It. You can listen to that song and their music, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your good tunes at. This has been lovely. I have been Marcellus.
And I'm Jamie.
Stay nerdy.
And stay black.
Sensational.